This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So we're starting to talk more openly about menopause, but we also know there is a long way to go in terms of general understanding around how menopause symptoms can impact all aspects of your life. For some women, menopause can be debilitating and can be the difference between working and not working and simply functioning day to day. And often, medication is vital for any type of quality of life. But getting the right medication and treatment, it can often be lengthy and a drawn-out process, and in some cases, even getting access to medication at all is problematic and adding a whole other level of frustration. Some women are experiencing incredibly long waits for menopause medication, and some say it's due to global shortages, but others say it points to a deeper issue on gender health equity. So, if you're going through menopause, how is it impacting your life right now? What symptoms do you have? And what changes would you like to see to help you either access information or medication and treatments to help you get through this stage of life? And we are talking about menopause more often now, but there is still a really long way to go. For some women, simply being believed or an understanding that they do need help, they need treatment and they need medication in order to function, in order to get out of bed, to be able to work. We need to look at our workplaces as well. We need to change some of our workplace practices so that we can get through this stage, this phase of our life that 50%, that half of us, half of the population will go through. And every woman's symptoms will be different. Sometimes we may not even recognise that what we're going through is menopause. So how can we make it easier? How can we make access to information and treatment better? Does it start from a medical perspective? Do we need better training for our pharmacists and for our GPs? Do we need better workplace practices? And do we need better access to medication? Anne Berthelsen Murray is living through menopause at the moment. And Anne, when we talk about how everyone's symptoms are different, yours are quite debilitating, aren't they? I mean, you get to the point sometimes where you can't even leave the house. Can you just talk us through what your menopause symptoms are like?
Yeah. Hi, Rochelle. Thanks for having me on the program this morning. Look, my symptoms have been very extreme for, you know, several years. I was what they term as perimenopausal. So that began for me around the age of 42. I'm now 51. And it presented with initially, you know, very irregular periods, and then the symptoms really increased with very, very severe hot flushes, which are incredibly debilitating. You know, they leave you covered in sweat. I also had terrible joint stiffness and pain, particularly in the morning when I'd wake up. I'd find it really hard to get moving. I think if you have, people have a bit of a disposition for anxiety or depression, those conditions can really intensify during menopause, which can be, you know, so hard to deal with. Insomnia, not being able to sleep.
Oh, gosh. Well, you poor thing.
Another one. So, you know, women often, their bodies sort of betray them. You start to gain weight, particularly around the middle, and it's very difficult to shift, even though you're not doing anything differently. It's, yeah, so all of those sorts of things.
I mean, even when we talk about hot flushes, it's kind of this term that we just use that goes hand in hand with menopause. And it's a term that sort of gets thrown around quite loosely. But if you're completely drenched in sweat and you need to change your clothes, or then, you know, afterwards it can create chills, all sorts of things. So even something as simple as that term that we flow around, oh, yeah, hot flushes, it's more than that, isn't it?
Well, it's far more than that. I mean, it's not just, you know, a fluctuation in temperature. It's something that feels for me, and I don't know if other women have experienced this, but I almost get this sort of foreboding feeling before one comes on, and I feel quite anxious and sick, and then it starts to move up my body and, you know, ends on my face, burning hot cheeks, and then I sweat. It's very, very unpleasant.
So when you spoke to your doctor about this, I guess first things first, what kind of reaction did you get? Did you have a good GP that was able to recognise all of these symptoms? And then what kind of treatments were you told that were available for you?
Yeah, so this is probably one of the biggest barriers for me, or has been, for effective and adequate treatment of menopause, was I found, you know, visiting several different GPs, there was a real lack of knowledge, and on two occasions I was actually told by two different GPs that they didn't know enough about the condition to really prescribe something for me, which
that's disappointing.
Completely flabbergasted. Yeah, and I questioned them and said, you know, look, this condition affects half of the population, so I'm really disappointed that, you know, you can't help me. But that is what I encountered. So it's been trial and error trying to find someone that has the knowledge and the expertise to help me. And in fact, I ended up doing a lot of research myself online and looking at what I thought might be useful.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a text here that says it's not just the hot flushes. Don't just talk about that. I mean, that's the point. This is what we're talking about today, Anne, is the fact that it's not just the hot flushes. It's all of the things that you just listed. And I guess more importantly, for every woman, it's going to be different. What sort of treatment were you offered once you actually got a GP that listened to you?
Yeah, so I was offered a choice of a gel that, you know, contains estrogen and progesterone, or a patch that you just adhere to your skin, and the other option was tablets. So combining both estrogen and progesterone, it depends where you are in the menopause cycle, whether you're perimenopausal or post, is how they'll determine, you know, what dosage of estrogen or progesterone that they will prescribe you. And I've been on the patches. They haven't been perfect at times. I've had to adjust doses myself because I've been so disillusioned by the GPs I've seen that I couldn't bear to go back and go through it again. So I actually started cutting them in half because I found I had too much of the hormones, which were affecting me adversely. And then, yeah, as you might be aware of, I went to get my script and there's none available.
So what were you told? The shortage of these patches for women is something that we're hearing a lot of now. What were you told them? What was the reason behind the shortage?
That the pharmaceutical companies just were out of supply in Australia, and that they didn't know when that they would be back in stock. So, you know, I was lucky enough to have a really helpful pharmacist, Louise, who I think you might be talking to later. And we sort of brainstormed together what might be a substitute for the patches. And she actually rang the local medical clinic to tee up a telehealth appointment for me that afternoon. So because I needed to go get something, you know, straight away, basically. I didn't want to just stop my treatment dead. She rang the clinic, spoke to the GP who... you know, she told him what we'd decided on, and I had a telehealth appointment with him, and he told me that he couldn't prescribe what she'd advised because he didn't know enough about that medication.
This is something it feels like, and we're actually going to be speaking to multiple people today about where do we start with education, taking it seriously, understanding how life-changing it can be for women to have or to not have access to this type of treatment. Just finally, Anne, I mean, if you don't have access to these patches, how will it impact your life, your day-to-day life?
Well, it's massive, Rochelle. You know, I feel so anxious all the time because you know, I don't know when. Well, the hot flushes actually continue for me pretty much every 10 to 5 to 15 minutes per hour, 24-hour period, and that's including overnight. So, you know, blankets on, blankets off, fan on, fan off. So it kind of restricts my ability to plan for things or enjoy things. It really saps the enjoyment out of day-to-day life for me.
Gosh, I hope it gets fixed for you, Anne, and if nothing else, shining a spotlight on it, like I know you've done with Daniel Miles, who often co-hosts this show with me, and you spoke to him as a part of an ABC digital story and speaking today. I think there's a lot of women and their partners out there too that are thanking you for speaking so openly. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Anne Bertheson-Murray there. Like many of you, with all of the messages that are coming in, your symptoms are different. This, Risha, went into menopause at 45. The symptoms were horrendous. Hot flashes around 4 an hour, and they were accompanied by anxiety attacks. I was put onto patches, which I stayed on for over 15 years because the symptoms always returned with a vengeance. Now at 63, I'm off the patches, but my body is now protesting with further weight gain, no energy, aching, stiff body, dry, itchy skin. It seems to never end. That's from Robin. And another saying, perimenopause brought on migraines for me. I was then placed onto menopause treatment as well. That were chronic, it was debilitating, it has impacted every part of my life quite severely. I feel like I'm a shadow of my once effective and efficient happy self. And this is not just menopause, it's perimenopause too. It's important to acknowledge that as well. Absolutely it is. And it's also important to acknowledge that everybody's symptoms are totally different and it can impact your lives in many ways. The thing we want to get to at the bottom today is, what treatment are you being offered? What information are you being offered? How educated is your GP on the types of treatments that you have? And then once you get that treatment, what kind of access do you have to it? Are you finding that there are shortages at the moment?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Rochelle Hunt here with you as we talk about what access you have to menopause treatment, to information, but also to the actual patches or medicine that you may need. This, I'm a full-time health professional, I'm on the road, and I'm heavily reliant on the self-injectable monthlies for migraine. My neurologist wrote out a different script, but I can't get access to that either. Thanks to a shortage around the country in December. How can a first world country make this happen? I'm tearing my hair out trying to get this medication. I'm beyond frustrated. Why are we not making some of these medications here? And others say, when I hear of the shortages of medication, I start to panic. I cannot live without these particular patches. Carol's in Sandringham. Morning, Carol.
Oh, morning. How are you?
Really well. What did you want to share?
I just wanted to say, I mean, I'm well past menopause now, but when I was going through it and I worked in a hospital, my charge nurse, when I'd get a flush, she would say in a loud voice in front of the male nurses too, "Oh, you're having a flush, are you?"
Mm.
Which would make it 10 times worse. And I just wanted to say that if people are listening, please don't react like that to people.
I think there's a lot of work to be done when we talk about treatments. It's not necessarily just patches, for example, Carol. It's also how we treat and accept menopause, perimenopause in the workplace and things that can be done to normalise it and to help you live through it.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely true. I mean, it was very traumatic for me. You know, I'd go home in tears quite often.
Oh, Carol, I'm sorry to hear that. I really am. Thanks for sharing your story. This, Risha, I can't call as I'm in my menopause doctor's waiting room. Couple of exclamation points here. It says, this is my favourite topic as we all suffer from the lack of hormones, either obviously or silently, which gives people a false sense that nothing is wrong. We need our hormones for the rest of our lives. Menopause is that one day anniversary of the year that we had our last period. The word doesn't equate to a third of our lives without our hormones. We can't protect ourselves and our cognitive function, our cardiovascular, our bone health. Find yourself a clinic who can prescribe HRT, but also, I think more importantly, find yourself a doctor that listens to you as well and that understands it. But lots of people kind of freaking out when they hear there's potentially a shortage of some of this treatment. Louise O'Keefe is a pharmacist in Wonthaggi. Louise, what sort of shortages are you witnessing in your pharmacy?
Hi, Rochelle. Yes, thank you for having me today. We see shortages of medicines across the board every day. We're constantly needing to troubleshoot for our patients. Unfortunately, with HRT patches, this has been ongoing for a good 6 to 9 months now. And there's various reasons across the board. So I believe for HRT patches, one patch was discontinued earlier in 2023. And as far as forecasting goes for other manufacturers, if this isn't taken into account, we are going to find ourselves with a shortage of various options.
Is this because there is just a shortage of particular drugs in general and access? Do we still have supply chain issues, or is this something that's specific to HRT and to menopause treatment?
No, it's not specific to HRT and menopause treatment. You can jump on the TGA website any day and see hundreds of medicines listed that are in short supply. And again, various reasons. So it could be a raw ingredient issue, but often it is global. We are just a drop in the ocean in the global supply chain. Now, so we do rely heavily on medicines being manufactured overseas. And I think that's a big consideration that we need to look at as a country, as a government. We need to invest in our healthcare system, not always look at trying to get the cheapest options on the PBS.
Because there's quite a few people that are texting, and here's just one of them, for example. It says, I'm a single mum, two daughters. I use HRT. My daughters both need ADHD medication. I have so much trouble getting both medications. And some month we're a house full of unmedicated crazy people. And then her question is, it says, why are we in such short supply of medications in this country? Is it just because we don't, like as you said, Louise, we just don't make enough here? And I know with some particular drugs, I'm thinking about weight loss drugs in particular, some pharmacists were even compounding their own version of some of the weight loss drugs. Are we, I mean, should pharmacists have more control to be able to make or to compound, do you think?
Okay, that's a huge question.
Oh, no. Sorry to throw that one at you.
Issues. No, that's fine. Just stepping back a little bit to the family you just described. Unfortunately, that's been a classic example across the board. So ADHD medicines that affect a lot of children, but now a lot of adults, and also as we're talking about HRT. So again, it's a manufacturing and a forecasting issue, I believe. So it comes back to where the medicine is sourced from. And if we haven't, if there's a logistical holdup in shipping, getting things into the country, a quality control issue with a certain batch, like there's so many particular parts of the manufacturing process that can lead to a holdup. It just shows how dependent, I guess, we are on a system, and how one little, one part of that chain being affected,
the whole thing comes undone.
Yeah, it does.
If it was a different drug, though, Louise, if this wasn't something that was specific to just women and to menopause, do you think the outcry or the urgency would be different?
No, I don't. No, there are shortages across the board. I think it's fantastic we're talking about it, because it's bringing more education to menopause as a condition. I think that's a problem. People need to understand menopause much better. And Anne touched on that with GPs. It's almost a specialty area. So, and I do feel for local GPs, because they're expected to be across everything. And it's a massive area to be across. It's almost impossible.
And it's so individual, isn't it, as well?
It is.
Everyone's symptoms are just completely different to the next. And as you said, this is a huge job for GPs. And this text says, Please don't turn this into a GP bashing discussion. I'm a mid-50s female GP working rurally, and I see many women who are perimenopausal and menopausal. I'm booked out for months in advance. Please support those of us who are doing work in this area and support us to educate GPs who are less confident in this space. The supply issue is just getting trickier and trickier. Does it come back to exactly what that text just said, Louise, like supporting pharmacists, doctors and women more, whether it be through education as well as access, and then cost as well? We haven't even thrown in the cost of these patches.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with that comment by the GP. So I'm in a regional area and we have constant staff shortages with all healthcare professionals. It is a challenge. I think when we're dealing with shortages, the biggest challenge as a healthcare professional to help the patient is to be able to communicate with other healthcare professionals in real time, because really we're in the pharmacy, for example, I have the patient there in front of me desperate to get an answer, to know what is going to be offered, to know what the options are. So I think better communication between GPs, pharmacists, specialists, just being accessible will help everybody. I mean, ultimately, we all just want to make it easier for the patient. They've Absolutely. Got enough going on that they're dealing with. And again, being regional, I find I have great communication generally with my GPs. So absolutely, that's critical for all of us. But when we talk about, for example, if it's quite a complicated series of symptoms that a lady is going through and they need to exclude more serious medical conditions, say if it's joint aches and pains and brain fog and those type of symptoms, you need to go through a series of tests and to identify that there's nothing more serious going on. So, you know, we do need, it is complicated. And sorry, at the end of the day, when the patient then comes to us, if we have to change their therapy, sometimes it's a non-PBS listed item that we have to offer the patient.
See, that's so interesting, because people are talking about the cost here. I mean, there's just one of them, Louise, and it says there's so many issues with menopause care. Here's just one. I've just paid $60 plus at the pharmacy for a one-month supply of a base-level HRT. Why is it so expensive? It literally means I can work, and that's the difference for that particular texter. Not everyone can afford that, though.
100%. And this is what I mean by I wish our government would invest more in our PBS rather than trying to keep the prices with the manufacturers as low as possible, because at the end of the day, if there's no other suitable option, often there's only private options, and that's very costly, and patients have already forked out to see their doctor or their specialist. And the other side of this is if a lady goes from a patch to a gel, you're really having to tweak doses again and almost start from scratch. And when you're talking about gels, often that causes discomfort for the patient. You know, I guess I wish there was a much better response, some kind of an arrangement where the TGA could respond in much more real-time fashion to approve an alternative that is on the PBS. So it might be private the rest of the time, but when there's a shortage, we need to respond and help the Australian public.
Well, the community of One Thug is lucky to have you, Louise, for being such a great advocate and for speaking out as well. So we thank you for your time and for the work that you do.
Pleasure. Thank you for bringing it to everyone's attention.
That's Louise O'Keefe. She's a pharmacist in Wonthaggi. So many texts, I can't keep up with them, so apologies. Here's just a few. I've got a wonderful GP. He's been my GP since I was about 25. I'm 51 now. I'm going through perimenopause, and he has been fantastic. He's researched into things, read articles with other colleagues, and has really taken an interest in trying to learn more. I saw a specialist endocrinologist who complimented and commended my GP for all the work that he's done so far in helping me with perimenopause. There are good doctors out there and they specialise in this area. I'm very thankful and grateful for him. That's Joe, who's in Brighton. Louise is in Rye. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning. Yes, I just wanted to discuss my experience. I've been on patches for perimenopause. I'm 51 for about maybe 18 months. I experienced a shortage last April, May, June. I'd have to go to several pharmacies to get them. I was fortunate too, but then at one stage I wasn't able to, so my GP offered me another patch, but then I could get my original ones back because they were working so well with the sleeplessness and the hot flushes. So it was just brilliant. So touch wood that I can still get them because they just work so well.
That's it. And there's the difference between you being able to sort of just function in a normal everyday way, Louise, and not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I was, before I started the patches, I would wake up, I would maybe have 2 hours sleep. I was having, you know, hot flushes a few times every hour. Like you mentioned earlier, I'd have the fan on, then I'd have the fan off. I'd have the window open and it's the middle of winter.
There's a text here from Sue, Louise, and it says, can this conversation please be handed directly to our health ministers? The agony is real. Do you feel like you're being listened to and that your symptoms are being taken seriously, Louise?
With family members, yes, absolutely. And with my GP, she's absolutely fantastic. I don't go around discussing it, you know, with strangers or anything like that. And with some friends as well. And they're experiencing similar things. But the distress at not being able to obtain the patches was very
real.
Don't
even want to think about it, yeah. Well, you're certainly not alone there. Christine's in Hampton. Good morning, Christine.
Oh, hi.
What did you want to share?
Just more about the cost of patches. Every time I go to pay for them, it sort of makes me think about people that are not able to access this treatment.
What does it cost you, if you don't mind me asking, Christine?
Oh, it's between sort of $50 and $60. And like someone has already said.
A month, yes.
Yes,
that's a lot of money.
It is. It is. Unfortunately, I can afford it, but there are so many people out there that are having to make choices, and this treatment really works.
Have you had any shortages? Have you had any issues with shortages, or has your pharmacist or doctor told you that there's potentially going to be shortages?
The particular patch I use hasn't been available for now a couple of years, basically since COVID. So I'm already paying for an inferior patch for that price, between $50 and $60.
The idea that you need to be relatively wealthy or in a stable position in order to afford them, I find ridiculous, actually, Christine. Like, it shouldn't be the difference between somebody. I mean, when we talk about the impact on our entire economy, it can be the difference between you being able to work and not work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a nurse myself, so I guess that's why when I sort of think of people not being able to afford it, it's just in this country, it just shouldn't be that way.
Christine, good on you. Thanks so much for sharing your story as well. So maybe it's your symptoms, what has worked for you. Have you struggled? Are you struggling to be able to afford to get HRT patches? Or maybe you've been told they're in short supply. Or maybe you've had a really great relationship with your GP, like that one particular texter who's saying their GP is trying to learn more about the symptoms, to learn more about the treatments that are effective.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt. And if you're going through menopause at the moment, how is it impacting your life? How different are your symptoms, say maybe to friends, to family members, to colleagues that are also going through perimenopause or menopause? And what kind of treatments have you been told is available to you? This is a message from Jen, and it says, hi, Rochelle. I'm hoping that either you or some of your guests might be able to explain why there is such a gap in GP knowledge around menopause. I went to see three GPs before I got a diagnosis of perimenopause and before I got some assistance. And others saying HRT should be free. Imagine the increase in return to work employment rates if that was the case. Vicky Doherty is the Executive Director of the Australasian Menopause Society. Wow, so many good ideas, but also frustrations that are coming through here, Vicky. If HRT was free, would the return to rate work go through the roof, do you think?
Oh, look, I'm not too sure. We don't really have a lot of data about the impact of menopause in the workplace. So I can't really answer that question, sorry.
I could imagine, like, anecdotally that it would. I mean, I think you've actually just hit the nail on the head there that we don't have a lot of information and anecdotes about menopause in the workplace. And I think possibly a lot of workplaces need to change and to need to change how they run in order to ensure that women can be there, but that's something for another time. Let's talk about the patch shortages. How much of an issue is it?
Oh, it's been a huge issue for both women and the doctors that are treating them as well. We have members that are spending their whole lunch breaks trying to find pharmacies that have supply for their patients. And it's causing a huge issue.
So we heard from a pharmacist before that it's not just HRT medications, it's all different types of medicines and treatments at the moment, that there's a global shortage across a lot of things. What's the solution, do you think? Is it that we need to stop looking at overseas drugs, that we need to start manufacturing more here?
I think, there is barriers when we have production overseas and how we're competing in the global market. But I think that the Therapeutic Goods Administration, who is the body that regulates medications in Australia, and the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, which provide government subsidies for medication, both the approval processes are very bureaucratic. So there's a lot of barriers for pharmaceutical companies in applying for both products to be approved in Australia and then also listed on the PBS. So I think that creates a huge barrier for new drugs to be made available.
How possible, how likely is it for it to either be made available on the PBS or to be just made cheaper in general? Is it being done anywhere else?
Look, other countries, I think, have much less bureaucratic systems for approving their medications. I mean, I've been told, I'm not too sure if it's exactly true, but applications to the PBS cost around $1.5 million, and there's several attempts that are often needed to list a product on the PBS.
How concerned are you that potentially women who want or need these particular patches can't access them or can't afford them?
Oh, it's a massive issue, because for women that have moderate to severe symptoms and can benefit from menopausal hormone therapy, if they're not getting access to these drugs, then their symptoms are going to come back, and that it can impact on all aspects of their lives, be it their home life, their social life and their work life.
Stay with us for a moment, Vicky. I want to have a chat to Liz, who's in Geelong. Hi, Liz.
Oh, hello. How are you going?
Really well. What did you want to share?
So I just wanted to share that I've suffered for about nearly 10 years with all that hot flushes and waking up every 2 hours and not being able to sleep, like, for 10 years. So it's been pretty awful, and, I can't work full time.
So when you talk to doctors, to health professionals, Liz, what are they telling you?
Well, I didn't even know anything about these HRT patches. I've never found a doctor that can help me. It's just like, no.
There's lots of people suggesting that you jump onto things like Jean Hales and a lot of the, I guess, the female-directed doctors and health groups. Liz, I'm really sorry to hear that you've been living through that for so long. I mean, Vicky, what can someone like Liz do? Where can she get help? I mean, to not even know that these patches were available and even existed, there's something kind of missing in our healthcare system and the assistance that's being put out there for women.
Oh, most definitely. There is a great lack of knowledge both in the community and among health professionals about menopause and its symptoms. So when there's a lack of knowledge, then people don't have the health-seeking behaviours. There's also a lot of stigma attached to menopause, and stigma undermines diagnosis, treatment and successful health outcomes. So people may struggle to find a GP that is up to date in menopause, but we need to remember that medical education and postgraduate training, the quantity and quality of menopause education varies greatly, and GPs need to be specialists in around 200 different conditions.
Yeah, that's right. So I just hope that Liz, you know, from Geelong, if you're still listening, that at least go and talk to your doctor about the patches and ask questions about them and see whether or not there's something that can help. I guess at the same time, we have to be asking all the right questions, Vicky, don't we? Because we can't expect our GPs to be specialists in everything.
No, that's right. But, you know, I think if we invested more in GP education around menopause, that would be a great thing for both GPs in how they can manage women, but then also the women that are coming to see them. And of course, knowledge is power. So if women have access to evidence-based information, then that helps. And the problem is that there's lots of misinformation out there. So how do women find that? So there's lots of fantastic resources on the Australasian Menopause Society website and also the Jean Hales website. They're both independent and evidence-based.
And just finally, Vicky, if we're seeing a shortage, if we're seeing women that are starting to panic and, you know, get really kind of worried about being able to access the types of treatment they want, do you have any concerns that we will start to see unregulated options come up? You know, it's a supply and demand issue, and sometimes people are going to, you're not always going to have the best interests at heart, and you're going to have people try and solve a problem.
Oh, most definitely. And we're seeing that happening more and more because it's estimated that the menopause market is going to be worth $600 billion. So there is lots of commercial interest jumping into this space. And they play on women's insecurities. So they like to promote products perceived to be natural when it's very rare that they haven't undergone some kind of manufacture in a laboratory, which doesn't really make them natural. So I would just encourage women to go see their GP. And if they're not happy with what their GP is telling them, we have a Find a Doctor service on our website. So we have over 1,000 members who have a special interest in menopause.
Thanks so much for your time and your work, Vicky. Vicky Doherty, the Executive Director of the Australasian Menopause Society. You can jump onto their website as well to get more information. I mean, gosh, knowledge is power, isn't it? Sue's in Sandringham. Morning, Sue.
Oh, hi. Look, I'm actually a postmenopausal woman, 60, and I've always looked after my own hormonal and sexual health. And I just think us women need to educate ourselves, educate our GPs, be proactive. There's nothing to be ashamed of. We're all over the whole breast cancer scare from way back when. And it's really good, the treatments now. And they have positive effects for cardiovascular, bone, all this other stuff. Different issue, I know, to the affordability. But that's
and did you use the patches, Sue?
Yes, I do. Yes, I have done. When I was in my 50s, I had a Mirena, which was fabulous for about 5 or 6 years. And I'm on patches and also tablet progesterone.
And did it take you long to find the right type of treatment that worked for you and to be listened to? Did you feel like you had to advocate for yourself?
Yes, I had to explain to my doctor what I really wanted to start with, but I'd done an awful lot of research and you really have to put the time and energy into it and find the right GP that will support you.
Yeah, well, that's easier said than done now though, isn't it, right? It's hard to even get in to a GP, and even going and seeing a GP isn't always affordable and isn't always something that, you know, every family and individual can afford. But Sue, thank you so much for your insights. Professor Susan Davis has an Order of Australia and is the Director of Monash University's Women Health Research Program and is the head of the Women's Endocrine Clinic at Alfred Hospital. Susan, you've been listening to a lot of this. I physically can't keep up with the texts of women either saying I had to advocate for myself, I'm really worried now that I won't be able to get my HRT. But we even heard from Vicky earlier who, even though she says she's been suffering through menopause symptoms, didn't even know that HRT patches existed. How far have we still got to go when it comes to just education and advocacy?
Oh, good morning. Look, we do have a long way to go. I felt very sad that that lady was not aware, because I think we've worked very hard to get the message out to the community. And I think possibly that's about maybe the stigma of menopause, because women usually talking to other women will learn about availability and treatment. So it's really important for people to feel comfortable to chat about menopause with their friendship group or their family members, and then they can actually be told, well, actually there is a treatment for this, you don't have to put up.
Everyone's symptoms are so different, Susan, and I know that you're a part of a group that's leading, I guess, a review of menopause guidelines to try and just clarify what symptoms are and how to best treat them. Gosh, that's a long and bendy list though, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think there are a couple of things. Firstly, we have published a review of all the guidelines, and it's very clear that the most distinguishing menopausal symptom, apart, the diagnosis of menopause is based on menstrual cycle bleed. So a woman is still having regular cycles, regular menstrual cycles. Their symptoms are not due to perimenopause. They have to look for other causes of their symptoms. For women who have had a hysterectomy or have not had bleeding for a while, the absolute classic symptom is hot flushes and night sweats, and that's when you really need to have a chat with your doctor. And there are, and I also say, there are lots of treatments other than patches. And I know there's been a patch shortage crisis, but there are other treatments available, and patches are not the be-all and end-all of treatment of menopause.
So what are some of the other treatments that we may not even have heard about or know about that we could be asking questions about?
Well, menopausal estrogen tablets have gone into disrepute by the community, but in fact are highly effective and in low doses, extremely safe for women, and sometimes give better outcomes than patches or gels, which often aren't absorbed. So I think we should not sort of forget that there are tablet forms. Patches and gels are interchangeable. I noticed the pharmacist mentioned that, you know, people can have trouble going from one to the other. You can easily go from a patch to a gel or a gel to a patch. So with patch shortages, I'd recommend women do talk to their doctor about using a gel. Implants are rarely used now, so the mainstays are patches, gels and tablets.
Is there still concern or fear around HRT and using it?
I think there is, and I think that I think we have to respect that hormones are still potent medicines, and we can't say there are no risks. I mean, you can't even take an antibiotic for a sore throat that there are no risks. Everything has a risk, but it's about the risk versus benefit. And I do worry about some of the very high doses that are being prescribed in the community that could potentially have risk. So we know about the safety of standard doses of hormone therapy, but not very high doses that are often being prescribed or compounded hormones.
So how does someone know, though, whether they're being prescribed something that's too high? Like, where's that basis of information for the average woman to even know whether or not it's too low or too high?
So we redeveloped the practitioner toolkit for managing menopause, which is endorsed by multiple organisations like the College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, the Endocrine Society, International Societies, Australasian Menopause Society. So the practitioner toolkit for managing menopause is published on our Monash University website, and it is open to anybody to download, and it has a list of all the available medications and what's a low, medium and high dose.
Stay with us for a moment. We'll have a chat to Jackie, who's been waiting patiently in Melbourne. Morning, Jackie.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. What did you want to say?
I just wanted to say that I've actually been through menopause twice.
Oh.
I had menopause in my 50s. I'm now 71 and I had no trouble. I didn't have many hot flushes and I breezed through it. I was quite happy with myself, very proud. Then I had breast cancer 3 years ago and my cancer was a hormonal cancer. So I now have to take estrogen suppressants for the rest of my life. And since then I have an average of 5 hours sleep a night. Mm. Mood swings, brain fog, depression, all of these things. But I can't take patches or any of those things. So I wanted to let people know that not everyone can take these things you've been talking about.
Absolutely, Jackie. And that's the thing. You need to work so closely with your health professionals and with your doctors and your specialists, because it is so individual. And Professor Susan Davis, you know, as someone, as the director of the Monash University Women's Health Research Program, there's not one size fits all, is there?
No, there's not. And for Jackie, there are treatments that are highly effective for hot flushes and night sweats that are non-hormonal that are available, including one that will be available in the next few months in Australia, a new one. So, Jackie, go back and speak to your GP or your oncologist and ask them what you can be taking, because I bet you'll find that there is something that will really help you.
Are there many new treatments? I mean, that's really exciting to hear. And, Jackie, we wish you all the best. We really do. And we hope that one of these new treatments will help you. Are there, how much work's kind of happening in the background, Susan, of work, of new medicines, of new treatments being discovered and made? And let's cross everything that they're being made and manufactured here locally.
Well, unfortunately, we do not have a pharmaceutical production industry here that's very strong. We have a lot of research discovery in Australia, but most of it ends up being bought and moved offshore, which is, and can I just say, as a hormone specialist, I'm seeing shortages across the board in other medications, not just...
We're hearing that.
You know, it's a problem of not having an Australian production industry. But having
will that ever change, Susan? I mean, couldn't we ever have an Australian production industry here?
Well, I think we can see that, you know, if the government's recognised this, and I know that there's going to be a new facility for the production of RNA vaccines in Australia. And I think COVID brought home the awareness how dependent Australia is on imports for drugs. So it will take time, but I think it's seen. But in terms of discovery, there's a lot going on, and particularly research into women. Why do women even have hot flushes and night sweats? What part of the brain causes this to happen? And there's a whole new class of drugs that are not hormones that are in development to actually target brain centres that trigger the hot flush or night sweat. And one of those drugs will be available very soon in Australia, so watch this space. And that could be a game changer for people like Jackie who cannot take estrogen.
Where do you think we'll be 10 years from now? I feel like over the last 10 years, the conversation, the awareness has changed dramatically, even in the last couple of years. Where do you think we'll be a decade from now?
I think we will know a lot more. We're particularly interested in the issue you asked Vicky about, menopause in the workplace. We've just recruited 8,500 Australian women to a study where we've been investigating menopause and the workplace. So hopefully in the next 6 to 12 months, we will have some really interesting data about how much is menopause and how much is just the work environment for women at midlife. But I think we're going to know a lot more. 10 years ago, no one wanted to talk about menopause. Now everyone wants to talk about it. So we're going to get new information coming out.
And we need accurate information, and we need information that's credible, and we need to be able to trust our sources and our resources as well, don't we? So that we know that we're going into something and that people aren't playing on our emotions and our vulnerabilities and the fact that we just kind of want our life back to normal to a certain degree.
Yeah, look, I think that if I had one message to women, it would be wise health consumers. If someone suggests taking anything, you know, alternative therapies, buying stuff on the internet, over-the-counter stuff, be a discerning consumer. Ask for the evidence. Is there any evidence this really works? If I spend my money, what's the evidence here? What's the evidence of safety? Because we really have to seek out the information and find credible sources like Jean Hales and the Australasian Menopause Society, where the information provided has been very carefully credentialed and reviewed.
Good to hear from you, Professor. Thanks so much for your time.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Professor Susan Davis there, Order of Australia and the Director of the Monash University's Women Health Research Program. She's also the head of the Women's Endocrine Clinic at Alfred Hospital. Grace has called us from Perth. Morning, Grace.
Good morning. How are you?
Really well. I love it when people call us from all different parts of the country. What did you want to share?
Hi, so I'm the CEO of Menopause Friendly Australia, and we support workplaces to address how menopause can impact people's workforce participation, not only from a physical health perspective, but also from a mental health perspective. I'm really excited to hear the results of the survey that Susan Davis just spoke of, and looking at what are some of the workplace impacts. We found that many people are telling us they're finding it really hard to stay engaged at work through this life phase. So we help workplaces to put in place systems and processes to help people.
And that, I think, will be the future of work too. And when we talk about cost and access to things like patches and all sorts of treatments, but also to have a workplace that not only understands but can change a little bit, right? It might even be the temperature or whatever it is, but to acknowledge it, accept it, and to make those changes. And when we have workforce shortages in so many different areas, I think this could be a complete game changer. Well, people can jump on and have a look. That is Menopause Friendly Australia, and Grace is the CEO there. If we didn't get a chance to read out your text, then I apologise. I will try and stay back and read through as many of them as possible. And quite often the texts that you send in, they turn into entire other programs. Lots of people talking about, you know, why we haven't discussed perimenopause. We've done entire programs on perimenopause. So if you go back through the Conversation Hour feed, go to the ABC Listen app, or even if you just put Conversation Hour, menopause, perimenopause into your search engine, there are a heap of different programs that we've done. And thank you to all of you who called through as well and shared your particular story. Let's hope, if nothing else, we see the cost of some of these treatments and some of these medications come down in price. Don't forget, the Conversation Hour is a podcast. We do lots of different topics every day. So, as I said, subscribe to the Conversation Hour, go to the ABC Listen app, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.